C1M. Number 6B.
So, you may have seen, as I put the question 4A, how often she uses that term union. That she uses that term union as the union of masculine and feminine qualities to unite those more closely to God. The union of spirit, the union of interest and affection, you see, the union of heart. Well, it comes in other terms like conjoining and spiritual oneness, which is also a union, as welding indissoluble links, that's also a union which can't be broken, the unbroken links of eternal being, you see. You get the sense, here she speaks about fundamentally about the oneness and unity of pure affect. And then 4B, life, the question 4B about life, well, that is just flooding through the text. I think if you read the text through quickly and quickly again and again, just to listen with spiritual ear, and just can't help feeling how this unity with spiritual quality always has that effect of life as promotion and improvement, of advancement, of gaining, reaching, enriching, enlarging, promoting, improving, propagating anew. See, one gets a sense of enormous richness. Well, anyway, I got it. And I'm sure you got it too. Or a sense of exaltation, where it's always, where these terms come in, of elevated existence, of giving new pinions to joy, of lifting one's being higher, of ascendancy, exalted about the highway, the noble ambition, inspiration, elevation of society. I get the sense, well, one begins to touch the law of the scriptural note here, that one says, all right, if I unite more and more closely, more and more indissolubly, with spiritual qualities, with pure qualities, with purity, with the pure qualities of the heart, and so on, if I unite with those, the spiritual law says, well, that lifts me out, lifts me higher, that raises the whole standard of manhood. It ushers me into a better, higher, refined sense of manhood. You have all these comparatives. I'm not going to take them again. I took them last time. You could see them, how it is the comparative, the stage of the comparative, as we have said, it's the transitional stage, you see. It is that stage, that wonderful period where we find the principle ruling the transitional stage. Ruling the transitional stage. What would we do if we wouldn't have a principle ruling the transitional stage? It would be heartbreaking. It would be heartbreaking. Because we would say, well, here I am, full of fear and hate and full of distrust and full of belief. And I have the promise somewhere that there is another reality, that there is a reality full of spiritual ideas, but how do I get there? And there would be enormous gaps. But science must touch all aspects of being. And so we must, here she gives the science of this transitional stage, the science which governs the changes. I think in prose work she speaks somewhere of the science of the which governs the changes. See, science of being is not only concerned with the absolute, it's also concerned with the scientific way to the absolute. And then the tone of truth, you will have seen through the text in many ways, coming out by showing that it always centers around men, that it centers around all races, all societies, civilization, about mankind, both sexes, about wife and husband, and even the bride and the lover, and the parents and the ancestors and the children. You see, you get the whole range of manhood here. It shows that every aspect of manhood and every relationship of manhood is here touched. You really get the world here. Now when you read this chapter, you find you are finding a picture of the world. And, now, then we come to the introduction of the chapter where it is shown that when our great teacher came to him for baptism, John was astounded. But Jesus, reading his thought, said, "Suffer it to be so now, for thus it becomes us to fulfill all righteousness." It was Jesus' confession. You see, now we come back to what we said in the first hour. The moment we make a concession, we have to suffer it to be so now. The moment we make a concession, which Jesus made, he made the concession that he assumed for mortals the weakness of the flesh, he had to suffer for it. He took also on the suffering for it. And here too, Jesus could see that. He said, "All right, I make the concession to John the Baptist. I submit myself to John the Baptist. I suffer it to be so now, because," he says, "it becomes us to fulfill all righteousness." He could see very well that he had to go the way entirely, that he had to go the way every step of the way, and couldn't sidestep away a step. Now, this chapter here we have seen of marriage is the confession. It's the confession where we say, well, we make the confession that we are mortal, and that as mortals, and that term mortal comes again and again in this chapter, that as mortals we begin to see that goodness in embryo, which is in every mortal, that remnant in us can develop and germinate and unfold until it throws off the mortal entirely. It isn't an improvement of the mortal which he shows here. Let that be quite clear. It's showing that little embryo of goodness which is always nurtured and which ultimately, at the end of the chapter, comes always in that term, but ultimately will throw off the scum, will ultimately see man's unity with God. And that ultimately, you see, you get that touch. But the beginning of the chapter is always until then. What happens until then? Until then, we must make concessions. We must make concessions to body and to time and to the work and to the period and to the world in which we live in. We must make concessions to the power of politics, to the financial powers. We must make concessions to many things in this world. We just can't say, "I'm not living in this world." We are living in this world. And so it is a suffering to be so now. But the question is, and that's the main point in this chapter, is, are we going to make these concessions to build up error or for the advancement of good? What sort of concessions are we going to make? How are we going to make concessions, and for what? And naturally, the aim, as we see it here, is that Mitzvah shows, all right, although we must make concessions to the human, let's see that we make it only as far as it is for the advancement of the good, only as far as it is to steady or to consolidate what has already been achieved as good, to steady that which is good, so that the standard of manhood doesn't drop and drop, but that we first of all consolidate the good that through centuries has been achieved, and from there try to improve and improve life more and more. As you, some of the references I have given on this point, I want to repeat, as for instance, as she has said, thus it is that our great exemplar, Jesus of Nazareth, first takes up the subject. He does not require the last step to be taken first. He came to the world not to destroy the law of being, but to fulfill it in righteousness. He restored the diseased body to its normal action, function, and organization. And in explanation of his deeds, he said, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becomes us to fulfill our righteousness. Because then later on, the spiritual body, the incorporeal idea, came with the ascension. See, that's the concession which we all have to make, namely the concession that we have a body. He says, don't mistake the last step to be taken first. His first step was to bring normality to mortal mind, to body, to bring abnormality of mortal mind back to normality of body. But the ultimate really is, you see, that's the science of physical harmony. But the ultimate of it is naturally that all this must serve and serve to the ultimate proposition, namely to that proposition of the ascension, where his material body was absolved from death and the grave. That's the ascension. That's the science of spiritual harmony. So until then, there is that science of marriage, of the transitional state, where we have to make concessions, but to make it in the right way. She also says in miscellaneous writings, as you remember, from a human standpoint, a good mortal must first choose between evils. An absolutist wouldn't like that. Oh, no. He must first choose between evils, and of two evils, choose selection. And in the human, we usually have to do that. And it is a big question, and not always a very easy question, in the human, what is the lesser evil of two? But the more we find which is the lesser evil, the more we choose the lesser evil, the more we help and contribute to the resurrection of the standard of humanhood in the world. So, in question six, you could see that marriage really is depicted as a concession until the spiritual creation is discerned intact. So that until comes in quite often. It shows the time element in it. And if I have time, I will show you a few things in this chapter about it afterwards. The time element comes in. When the time element comes in, it comes always in the gradual development towards the ultimate. In the article on wedlock, Mrs. Eddy puts it very nicely. She says, until time matures human growth, until we come to that manhood and womanhood in Christianity, until time matures human growth, marriage and progeny will continue unprohibited in Christian science. And then she says, we look for future. You see, now comes the future. She looks into the future. We look to future generations for ability to comply with absolute science. Then marriage shall be found to be man's oneness with God, the unity of eternal love. You see how she spends again that whole chapter. Begins and says, until that time comes, and until we have grown enough, well, we make the concession of marriage and progeny. But in the future, there comes an ultimate where we can see that marriage shall be found to be man's oneness with God, the unity of eternal love. That's the vision of the Apocalypse. She says, let no mortals permit a disregard of law, which might lead to a worse state of society than now exists. See, that's the concept. When we make concession, we must see that it doesn't, that it hasn't a derogatory effect, but always an exalting effect. She says, to abolish marriage at this period, she makes again the distinction of this period and later on, to abolish marriage at this period and maintain morality and generation would put ingenuity to ludicrous shift. Yet this is possible in science, and she puts science in italics, although it is today problematic. Can you see how she says, today, at this period, she advocates marriage and having children. And she says, if we abolish marriage, well, that opens the gates wide for misuse. But she says, but in science, when that period arrives in our consciousness, where we really are living in science, then we can, marriage can be abolished. She says later on, wisdom in human action begins with what is nearest right under the circumstances, and then achieves the ultimate. I feel this is such an important point, because always students will ask and say, well, what is now the absolute right in this case? And usually one doesn't know. Usually one doesn't know what is absolutely right in a human situation. And if we don't know, well, what can we do? Well, then, when one doesn't know what is absolutely right, the student feels, or the beginner feels, well, I'm letting down God, I'm letting down science, I'm not going to live up to science because I don't know the absolute right. That's only because we don't see that the third chapter is a stone in the whole matrix, and therefore good, and therefore right, and that stone in the matrix, that third chapter says, it's not only always the absolute right which is necessary to know, it's also right to know the nearest right of what you know. Because it says that nearest right under the circumstances, from there you will be led on, from thence achieve the ultimate. See, it's the Philemon that comes in. It's tender. The chapter of marriage is the most tenderest. Can you say most tenderest? Or? Tenderest, yes. a chapter. It's so loving to us. It's so often we don't know what is the right thing to do in a human situation. If we don't know it, we can do that which we feel with all our heart and with all our best we know, which is nearest right. Which is nearest right. And from then we will be led on and we'll be shown. One step will show the next step, just as one day leads to the next day and one year leads to the next year. So one spiritual step will lead to the next spiritual step until we reach the ultimate. It may take time, but we will get there. And lastly, we will see that time never was a fact in being, so we don't have to bother about that. But I think it will be a comfort to many, many who don't know what is the absolute right to do, if they do the nearest right and have the inward feeling and the inward conviction that that's the best they do and the highest one can ask from them, and that there is nothing more demanded of them, that one can't ask more than what they are, and not to be depressed that they let down science or God. All right, we'll stop here.